Well, good day, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and you gators and grannies, to the Sunday afternoon edition of The Big Puzzle. My name is Barry Prince, and coming to you live from my residence here in northern British Columbia through the facilities of People's Internet Radio and being simulcast on shakeandwakeradio.com. We are viewer-funded stations, guys, so if you like what's going on over here, please hit the donate button. I know they would really appreciate the help. There's a lot of work going on behind the scenes here. Today, we're going to get into a talk about a subject that just kind of came out of need here in the last little while in Canada. And I'm talking about a convoy of trucks that is being organized and is going to descend on our nation's capital. And when I first heard of this, I really kind of applauded the idea. We're going to get some interactions in groups, and we're going to get some pushback, and we're going to get some negatives and positives. But what I see right now is probably one of the best unifying mechanisms that Canadians can unify under and express their absolute disdain for what's going on inside our government. I'm joined by Glenn Sarek and Laura. I don't even have Laura's last name in front of me here. I have a guest that's joining. I don't even have the last name. How's that, guys, for amateur radio? And I've also got Rick Boswick in here. I'm going to let Rick make some comments in a few minutes here on the show, but I wanted to introduce you to Glenn Sarek. He is the character. I hope I pronounced that right, Glenn.
No.
He's the organizer. He's the organizer of this truck convoy that's happening right now in Alberta. Welcome to the show, Glenn, and hey. Tell people what's going on.
Thanks for having me. First of all, it's carrot, just like
carrot.
Vegetable.
I'm bad, buddy. I'm amateur.
That's okay. Nobody wants to call
send me to the.
All good. Glad to be here. Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, well, tell us a little bit about how this all formulated and what's going on with it now and the people that are involved and the numbers you're seeing and how fast it's growing, because I know it's growing very quickly. And then yeah. I'd like to introduce your friend to us, too, also, when you're done.
Yeah, this is Laurel Nash. She's a podcaster herself, actually, and a very well-educated lady. She's very big on environment, and she's a great addition to the team. She's, pro-pipeline, pro-advocate person. I'll let her explain more of that, obviously, but she's just a great addition to our team.
And,
perfect. And the reason we're doing this is, it kind of hit home just a couple minutes ago. I actually had one of my guys walk in the shop just now and said, I texted you, just wondering if there's any work out there. And I remember everybody's texting me, all my guys all the time, do you got work, and it's hard to take. Just, guys are out of work in this province, so we decided to step up and take some action. And we've been having these convoys in Alberta, and I applaud everybody that's been doing the work. These guys, they're putting these convoys together, and everybody's been joining. 2,000 trucks in Nisku, 400 trucks in Brooks, Rocky Mountain House, 1,000 people. And, we're just going and doing stuff, and it's all falling on deaf ears. Everybody said there's nothing going to happen until we take these trucks and drive them to Ottawa. And, and it's always talk, and this group just decided, enough talk. And again, I'm a small business grassroots guy. I've been in Alberta 53 years. Oil business since 04, back in 84, and I've seen the ups and downs, and we're just tired of it, and that's why we're doing it. We need some action out here.
Well said. Okay, and Laura, what is your role in this organization right now?
Hi, Barry. So I'm actually a veteran, so I was a Navy officer for almost 8 years, and I was quite disgruntled by the way that veterans are treated in our country, among a lot of other things. So I became involved with this movement because I'm also an environmentalist, and I think that pipelines are actually the safest way to transport oil. So, for example, in the city that I live in, Ontario, if a train wrecks, just like in Lac Mégantic, if you remember that, it was a massive explosion in Quebec that killed a lot of people.
Yeah, 56
if that happens
people.
In my town. Yeah, that's really horrible and really sad. Anyway, so that's what happens when oil trains spill. So that's why I'm more pro-pipeline than rail. And if it spills in our area, it's going to contaminate our Bay of Quinte, which we've spent a lot of time over the last 50 years repairing. And if it spills on the other side, then, we could lose 1,000 people. So I actually am pro-pipeline, even though I am for the environment, and I'm politically a small C conservative as well. And I don't think that the government is listening to the people. And so my big thing is I'm against the carbon tax. So we have a cap and trade system. We used to have one in Ontario. And cap and trade works. George Bush Sr. in the 90s, he put one in that saved us all from acid rain. So that works. But the carbon tax doesn't actually decrease the amount of carbon that's being put out. It's a good theory, but I don't see any evidence of it actually working. It's just a way to tax the working class. And as a Canadian, I am firmly against taxing the working class while letting the big polluters off. So I feel like the big polluters are getting exemptions, or they can afford the increase in fuel prices, whereas the working class Canadians can't. And so I'm standing on the side of the working class Canadians, and that's sort of my stance on everything.
Well, you know, I'm just going to elaborate on that for a minute. You know, the carbon tax is the biggest tax grab ever in Canadian history. It will have absolutely no effect on climate change in any shape or form. Will basically destroy a major part of Canadian business, and the trickle-down effects are really going to hit people hard in the pocketbooks where they're already being hit hard enough. To me, the carbon tax is nothing but a huge tax grab, especially in light of the fact that Canada is a carbon neutral country, that we actually absorb way more carbon than we actually produce because of the amount of trees that exist on this great country, as opposed to countries like China that have no carbon tax, are producing about 30% of the carbon in the atmosphere right now and have no system of controlling it or taxing it. We're producing 1.3 and we're absorbing about 10 times as much, about 10 times approximately that amount of carbon out of the air because of our trees. So what are they passing on us? Just a scam to actually attack the middle class. And that's what it's all about. But anyways, so all that being said, my thought on that real quick, I wanted to quickly get Rick's thought on it and say hello, and then I'm going to get back to Glenn, and we're going to talk about some of the meaty-greedy, some of the cool stuff I'm hearing about this convoy and really its implications for Canadians right now. Welcome to the show, Rick. Rick is also a podcaster and does radio shows, and gentlemen, I've got to know over the last little while, and you wanted to join in. Welcome to the show, Rick.
Thanks, Barry, and to your other two guests, we've spoken privately. I'm also here with Derek. I guess I wanted to jump in and kind of give my input as a creator and someone just who networks, goes and covers any events that he can and has a pretty good group of people across Canada. We're watching this thing unfold, and it's almost controlled chaos because there are so many different people that want to add their efforts into it. So, I mean, I guess the first thing I'd ask about is the outreach that you're seeing. You're talking about numbers of trucks, but people involved. What's that been like?
It's been a little overwhelming. We've gone from, of course, you start at zero, and you know we're into the thousands of members, and the support is just phenomenal. And we're working diligently to keep up with. You know, our message too is with the yellow vest is that we're a non-radical, non-racist, and non-hate part of it. And I know that some of that has gone astray, but you know, it's been just growing so fast that we're just trying to keep up. And you know, there is other groups out there. And my whole life, I've been an operations guy and a facilitator, you know, of people and managed for 30 years. And my goal is to bring all these groups, anybody that wants to work for the common goal, you know, to get trucks on the road to make some noise in Ottawa. That's what our goal is. We just want to see everybody in Alberta, you know, with the same mission. And at the end of the day, show what's going on. And not just Alberta. This is nationwide. We've got this. All right, oil industry affects the whole country. It's British Columbia, it's Saskatchewan, and we have people that come out here from all over the country that works. And of course, you know, we don't even we'll get into the pipeline issue later. I'm guessing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's I guess you know I'm beating around the bush. One of the things that I've been seeing over the past week or maybe 10 days is a lot of different players trying to monopolize the event. Now, whether that be to control the message, I mean, I have seen, you know, word of friction between certain groups and yellow vest groups. And I understand that there has to be a unified message. But, I mean, I find it really hard, first off, to attempt to split the two initiatives. Because before, obviously, this convoy, the same issues with carbon tax, with outside influence, with UN control, have bugged many different groups for years. Now it's affecting the oil industry, and I just wonder if that's going to be the topic of the day, or if some of the other really manifestations of this of globalism are going to come into play.
Yeah. Sure. So, I guess the question was, you're asking about the other groups that are being involved in the friction that's being created.
Yeah. People will show up. Just in Ottawa, the same people that have come out for many, many events for years, they're all going to want to show up and see this massive effort by the trucks. And it brings awareness to one of the many concerns that all these other groups have.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And that's the concern, is that, there's so much to facilitate, from fuel to accommodations to road transportation. We've reached out to every province minister of transportation, and we've registered the protest in Ottawa. And there's just so many logistics that we're trying to work on. And it becomes frustrating when there's no collaborative effort, because, how can we stay focused on the goal? And I think that's kind of what you're getting at, is we need to stay focused on the goal so that we can make sure that those trucks do get to the destination, because, it's a battle. It's a 3,500 kilometer, 4-day trek. This isn't a walk in the park.
No, it's a logistical nightmare. It is.
it is. People don't understand that. And that's what I want to focus my energy on, is making sure these truckers and everybody that's involved just gets there.
Right? Yeah.
And that we do portray a message for the whole country. So, I think it's not so much, who's building, it's why are other people trying to tear us down? That's my question. Like, there's claims that I'm not a grassroots guy. Well, come to my shop. I'll show you grassroots. I'll show you. I've been in this business a long time, and there's no more grassroots than what I got going here. So, ask my guys. Well,
what's going to happen here, gentlemen, is right now Canadians across the country are absolutely infuriated with what we see going on in Canada. Anybody that's paying any kind of attention right now to what's going on in the government is infuriated. Yeah. And people are looking for a unifying cause to have their disdain expressed to the government. And I think this is what's going to happen with this movement. So we have to be able to add and allow all voices, whether we agree with them, whether they actually play into what the original message was intended to bring. You're going to see people rally behind this, and I've already heard this, that people really want their voice heard. And this kind of attention is going to force mainstream media to expose what's going on. And to me, that could be the biggest blessing about this whole organization right now and what we're trying to do. So, but we have to be able to accommodate. We cannot let minor differences get between us, because that's going to rise up. Anytime something like this is organized, you're always going to have disruptions at different levels. And you have to get past that, because the final goal to me really is getting a big enough convoy going through. It absolutely garnishes Canadian media attention, worldwide media attention, and they will hear what is going to be said, and it won't be quashed. So to me, absolutely. this is a very, very good thing, my friends.
It is, and
and I'm supporting it.
Well, we're certainly glad of that. We need that, and it's the other, R4R, they've done a lot of good work, but they're not the only people that know how to facilitate. In fact, they don't even own a truck. We're talking about guys that own trucks and know how to facilitate that. They're just a representative of oil. I mean, I belonged to them before. I really actually don't even know what they do, to be honest with you. But, I'm an owner of a company, and we feel, when I got to make payroll and all that stuff, like owners out there respect that, and they see that we're in the same boat. So that's why I think we're going to really, really move forward with this historic event.
Yeah. No, you said you didn't know R4R very well.
No.
Okay. There was an issue that I was gonna bring up, but another person who was supposed to come on, and I guess didn't come on. So I'm not gonna pose questions without somebody able to answer. But that was one of my concerns too. That came up. That maybe. Yeah. I mean, you can call me up later, privately, but some interesting, you know, some thought-provoking things that I found out. So,
okay. Sorry, I don't know if there was a question in there.
I was just, yeah. Well, the other question, okay, I guess it's about getting the message out. I have a little less faith than Barry in the news's ability to, concede the point, I guess, and actually tell the truth. I think initially what they're going to do is they're going to focus on the truckers' message, the Alberta message, the oil industry message, and then try and claim that this whole fake racist yellow vest hijack just leached on. That's what I think is going to happen at first.
Of course they're going to try that, Rick, but yeah. I think we can get by that. I think we can call them out on this one.
Yeah.
Because I think if people really take a good look at this and realize it's a mechanism right now that we can have our voices heard, no matter what your disruption or your disputes with the government are, yeah. This is a mechanism right now that we could embrace. Now, if international attention is brought to this, I mean, this has already been covered on CTV. They've already started paying attention to this, and of course, they're calling us racist and bigots and everything else. But that's what we expect.
Yeah.
But we can get past that. We have to get past that. People aren't stupid. And if this garners enough attention and it becomes international, then the media in Canada, if they don't give it proper coverage, they'll lose anything left of the credibility that they have right now.
Yeah.
Period. So it could serve us in multiple ways.
I think most of their credibility is just about gone anyway. But
that's what I said. Whatever's left of it is going to be gone.
Exactly.
That's what I said. I didn't say they had much.
Yeah.
I think they're down to about 2%, but that 2% will be out the window.
Right. And that's why this is going to be a pretty hard movement to ignore, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, exactly.
Really, yeah.
So, Laura, you said
you're
an online host yourself, or you do radio shows?
I do, yeah. So I host a podcast and radio show. It's called the Zero Waste Countdown. And as a Canadian, I have to heat my home with oil or gas, and I have to put oil or gas in my vehicle to go to work. And from your toothbrush, you know, to your razor, to sometimes your socks if they're made of a synthetic material, that's all made from oil and gas, right? So we live in this oil and gas world. So my focus is if we want to get away from that sort of thing or make a difference, then we should stop consuming as much as we can, because we can't stop going to work. We can't stop heating our homes, but water in plastic bottles every single day. So I'm more focused on limiting things on a daily basis and then interviewing businesses who are on that page too. And Catherine McKenna came on my show and talked about that as well, because they're trying to address the overconsumption of plastics and all this like garbage, and it's really filling up our landfills and stuff. So I try and focus on that because I think it's ridiculous to just say, okay, Canadians, we're going to charge you more for living when we don't have another option.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm going to myself, I would love to see oil eliminated off the planet as quickly as possible. And to say that we don't have alternatives to it, I think that's something that people should pay a little bit more attention to. We can now produce a better fuel out of carbon simply by drawing carbon out of the air, adding a little bit of water, putting a little bit of electricity in it, and we produce a fuel that is far, far better than oil with no effects on the environment. Unfortunately, right now we live in an oil world, but I think if from an environmental point of view, the sooner that we get away from fossil fuels on the planet, the better off the world will be. But currently, right now, we're in the oil paradigm, but I would like to see us completely shift away from that. I would like to see people get educated on alternatives, because the alternatives are non-polluting, non-interfering with our environment. And if you're an environmentalist of any kind, or anybody that's paying attention to environment, realizes that our planet now is in more trouble than I ever thought I would see in my lifetime, that we're virtually killing this planet right now. And if you think that's crazy, I dare you to prove me wrong. Because I study this and I see what's going on. We all do. And we need to get away from fossil fuels. Like I said, we're still in the oil paradigm. But really, I hope the next generation embraces alternate energy fuel sources, because they're there. And
say,
it's
Barry,
undeniable.
Barry, can you explain what that is, Barry?
Look, Steve wants to ask me one question here. Hold on, guys. Go ahead, Steve.
Can you explain what that is on the 17th?
What's being for? I'll let Glenn, you want to elaborate again on the convoy and where it's leaving from? I've looked at the, I've already looked at the manifesto for your stops across the country, could you just elaborate on it again for a listener?
Sure. Yeah, we originally intended to leave on February 15th, And then the Canada Winter Games head coordinator reached out to me, and because they happened to be in Red Deer at the same time, and so we tried to resolve and how we could make it work. And one of the things she brought to attention to me, you know, because it's not my ball game, the media thing, and she said, you know, we would just like to make sure that they get the coverage, and so it made a conflict. So we graciously said, you know what, we'll change the date. It's gonna, you know, it causes, we've got a, it's a change now, right? So it's not an easy decision, but we in the sake of giving the Canada Games their splash on the 15th, we're gonna head out on the 14th, and we plan to, and it gives us an extra day of travel. You know what it's like going across Ottawa or across the country
in the wintertime.
Middle of February is not the, I mean, I'm gonna tell you, it's not high on my list of things that I want to do, but you know, we're forced to do it. I'm obviously gonna make the trek and make my stance, but you know, none of us want to have to do this, so. So anyway, then we're going to be convening on Parliament Hill. February 20th is a tentative date there. So we're going to be there for 3 days, and so that's going to give us an extra day of travel for anything that happens. I mean, we have so many logistics to work out. You know, this is just happening so fast that
yeah,
but we're on it.
Well, I think this is a pretty cool thing myself, man. I'd like to see this convoy of trucks going across the country. And boy, if that doesn't garnish international attention, I don't know what would. Yeah. I mean, there's other news agencies that are going to jump all over this, man. Yeah. What are these crazy Canadians up to now? Yeah. We're not so crazy, man.
Right?
Well, we've been barking. Yeah, we've been barking for a while. It's time to put some bite into the bark.
Yeah.
And we're seeing this all over the world, guys. We're not just seeing it here in Canada. Canadians are starting to wake up. But, you know, really, if you look at what's going on in France and Germany, anywhere right now, it really virtually on the state of civil war. And we're going to try and avoid that in Canada. We have to nip this in the bud right now, and we all know how deep and how evil it is. So we won't get into that right now. We'll keep on the subject of the trucks. I want to sit in one of them. Somebody's going to have to find me somebody with an empty seat, and I'll jump in one of these trucks and drive across the country with you.
Yeah, we'll get you a seat.
We can do a radio show on the road.
Yeah, you bet.
All right, we're reporting you live. Yeah. Where are we right now, guys? Where? Yeah. Flin Flon.
We'll have to wake you up off the sleeper in the back. That's what happens.
You got to find me one that allows smoking, though.
Yeah. Well, speaking of that, we're still trying to get out there for the start, so that we can ride the convoy from start to finish and get enough for a documentary.
Boy, that'd be cool, Rick. Wouldn't it? We could ride that convoy together, man.
Yeah. Hop truck to truck.
Get a few of us people together and get in there and do interviews and blast it out everywhere. Yeah.
That's exactly what we're going to do.
This sounds like a lot of fun, man.
Yeah. I'm going to tell you, and you guys probably, it's no secret, but I'm pretty sure we're going to have a lot of broadcasters and a lot of private, you know, different film crews. But it's what we do.
I got a friend up in Grand Prairie wants to jump in his motorhome and join the convoy.
Yeah.
He's an old guy. He's retired from the oil industry. I was talking to him the other day. He says, you know, I'm going to drive my motorhome down there. I'm going to jump in on this convoy and go for a drive in the wintertime. He's like 80 years old.
and you know what? That's the support we're getting. People see this message and they're jumping on it. They want to be part of this. This is what's making our stance in this country right now. We've had enough of things shoved down our throat from the second Trudeau. It's enough.
Yeah.
Well, this is getting to be an interesting conversation. And if there's anybody out there that's listening to the show that wants to call in, you can call in through Skype and simply send Super Big Bad Man 1. That's all one word, Super Big Bad Man 1. Skype request, and Steve will pull you into the show. Or you can call in on 269-409-1950. 269-409-1950, and we'd love to hear your comments on what we're talking about today. Going forward, Rick, tell them a little bit about what you've been doing lately and your involvement with this whole movement right now.
Well, I've been a couple of people asked me to reach out and see about getting an organizing team, some logistical support done here in Ottawa. So right now, I guess I've got like three different people that are working on different parts, talking with authorities. That's what I was talking about earlier when I mentioned so much, so many efforts, because it seems right now that three different groups are going to try and go in and get a permit. Now, I'm of the opinion that if you have this many trucks showing up, first off, nothing, you know, nobody can efficiently move an amount of people like that. So I don't know what a permit would do. I guess public notice of the requests of the police would be good to get out there for everybody attending. What they expect or what they frown upon. There's also, we have to look at other pages, you know, enemies like Antifa and stuff that, you know, at every event that they can go out and, you know, make idiots of themselves. This is a high value target, I think, for them.
Yeah. We got to expect that. Yeah. Absolutely. So
we've been, you know, just so you guys are kind of abreast of what, as I said, we have registered our protest. We've got people downtown Ottawa. We've already been talking to the authorities. You know, we're trying to, you know, make sure that every document and everything is covered so that we can, so that it's a peaceful protest. It's again, a peaceful protest. We're not those. I know that the Yellow Vest has been painted with this brush, but that brush has come from the people, the radicals.
Exactly. We've never gone to an event where our side, anybody on our side, intends to commit violence. Never.
No, right. We got a guard against that. We've also got her against about people infiltrating this group that want to incite that.
Yeah.
So we have to really be watching for that, guys.
Yeah.
Here's what's going to happen is that there's enough people. And you know what you said something earlier. You said people are smart, and people are smart, and people are hardworking, and this is and there's more smart, good, hardworking people in this country those people are gonna, I believe they're gonna get pushed out, and we're just gonna be there, and it's gonna be peaceful, and
yeah,
I hope. Like, I mean, you know, but I just, we're the majority. I believe that we're the majority, the good, hardworking Canadians.
Yeah, troublemakers will be very, very isolated and easily taken out, you know, if they want to try and do that.
They'll be identified. I'm going to give you an example. I went to the rally in Red Deer yesterday, and every Yellow Vest, and I had my truck out there, and it wasn't a convoy. It was just a rally, which is great. And they've done it every Saturday since, I think this was the fourth or fifth week. And I've missed one, and I see the same people out there, and more people and more people. And there was one person that was attempting to throw, you know, some coffee on people, and the cops came, removed them, and it was done. One person out of we had, I don't know what we had, 250, 300 people for that one. So.
Yeah. Always going to be one there.
Antifa. I've dealt with them, and I went to a protest in Napanee and in Kingston in Ontario, and they came on the bus. So they gave us a little bit of trouble and then kind of went away. But we were a small group too, so I think when they see 1,000 trucks coming down the road, I don't think they're going to be a problem, and I don't think as much as a force.
Yeah.
Well, all the trucking things, all the movements I've seen in Alberta right now have really inspired me. It's good to see people actually willing now to stand up.
Yeah.
But then really, we don't have a choice at this point. We are being crushed by this government. And if we don't stand up, you know, if you give them an inch, they're going to take a mile. And right now they've been getting inches from us for years, and they are taking miles. And it's got to come to a stop if we're going to save this country. You know, I don't say that lightly. I really see Canada in more trouble right now than I thought I ever would in my lifetime.
Is government spending?
Well, yeah, everything. Like I said earlier, I think what we're going to see here is a mechanism for people, no matter if their main concerns are immigration, illegals crossing our border, out of control government spending, our deficit, our involvement with the United Nations, our signing on the United Nations Mass Immigration Pact, our foreign funding, blah, 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 the allowing of ISIS fighters to walk free in Canada, why our government isn't being charged with treason, why Justin Trudeau is not in jail right now. There is 1,000 questions out there, and I think we're going to see a unifying mechanism here that people can really say, hey, it's not about oil with me, but these are my grievances, and I'm going to join you guys, because it's all part of the big same picture.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why I see it. I like it. I do. I mean, I'm still in believance that our government, the way it is set up right now, will never serve the people. I would love to see this. One of the things asked for in this convoy, if it happens to gain huge amounts of numbers, is the option for recall legislation in our country.
Yeah.
And referendums by people on major issues that are going to affect our future, i.e., of course, the mass immigration pact. But we didn't vote Trudeau in to sign on to that. We didn't vote him in to do half the things or anything that he's doing right now. Yeah. And he's acting like a dictator. So we got to stop it, guys. We do. So anyways, this has kind of got my attention. I'm going to support it, and I'm glad to have you guys in here today. I'm going to shut up for a minute. I'm like the Duracell bunny. I get going. I can't stop.
Yeah.
Glenn.
Yes.
How many trucks have you actually got right now
that
committed? You know, just a ballpark figure. I know that it's going up there all
tough.
The time.
It really is tough because... Well, here's the thing. The other thing about mid-February is that that's our busy season here, right? So as bleak as things are, that, you know, we might get that few trucks that might be out there. So that guys aren't going to be, if they're going to go to work, they obviously can't do it, which is a detriment to the movement. But there's going to be well over 1,000 trucks is my guess. I mean, I would, and here's these trucks are coming from all over the country. We've got people from BC starting out and, you know, coming. There was a big rally in I believe Vernon just over the weekend. And we've got people from Fort St. John. We've got Grand Prairie. And then we got people who are going to join us in Saskatchewan, Manitoba, and and Quebec and the Maritimes. Like, they're coming from every direction. Like, this isn't just, and that's where you're going to see this whole thing unite and
yeah.
for the government to realize that this isn't Alberta whining. This is we're not, you know what I mean? We're just, it's the whole country that's in trouble. And I think you're going to really see the whole country come together here and show what they're frustrated with.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, like that's what I've been trying to say. It's like I see it as a mechanism for people to voice their displeasure. And I think people are going to unite. It's timing right now, too. I mean, if people aren't aware of what's going on in Canada right now inside our government, then you really, truly do have your head completely buried in the sand. Mm. Or you're just listening to CBC and CBC only for your source of information. And if that's what you're doing, then you really have to get away from that right away. It's, you know, the trucking communities around North America are tight-knit communities. Truckers are truckers, and they listen to each other talk. They unite with each other, and I would love to see, and I think you probably will see, some American truckers want to get involved in this convoy. I wouldn't be surprised if you already had inquiries.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because I got, somebody messaged me this morning and said, I've got a truck coming back from a long haul in New York, and... They want to jump up through wherever and meet up. So yeah, you're right. That's only one that we know of. But I think there's going to be some support there, because they do unite.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing a lot of communities come out once they know the route, the rough times. You know, just like when you watch veterans come home through the Highway Heroes and everybody lines the overpasses. I want to see a real outreach of people that may not be able to travel, but can show their support from the cities as they pass through.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think that's going to help the image with the truckers too, because when my dad was younger, he said all the kids used to come out to see all the trucks, and trucks were a big deal, and all the kids wanted to be big truck drivers. And now in the last few decades, for some reason, truckers have this bad reputation.
Yeah.
And I think that this is really going to get that back up again, because it is a good job and it is a good way of life, and it does support families and Canadians. So I think a lot of kids that see this convoy go by are going to remember that for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
Yeah, good point. Really good point. Because yeah, you're right. Truckers have got a bad name here. They have established a bad name in the last couple, 3 years in Canada. We look at some of the road incidences and deaths and stuff like that. This will do something to bring their name back for sure. Kind of like that thought.
Yeah.
We're going to try and organize. We're going to get. We've been asked quite a few times. You know, are you going to be able to go through our city? And you know, we got like Highway 1, most of Saskatchewan. Anyway, I've only gone as far as Winnipeg myself, but in the truck. And a lot where we can't really go through too many cities. Maybe at the night, like when we stop for the evening, we can do a little trek. But we're really encouraging, like Laurel said there, you know, for people to come by the side of the road and really bring us on.
Well, I'm telling you, it's all about numbers, and I think you're going to get the numbers because, like I said, Canadians right now are really starting to understand that there's something wrong in our government.
Yeah.
So the more Trudeau shoots himself in the foot, the more and more people are going to start paying attention to the message that's being put out here.
Yeah.
So I think the timing is really good right now, especially watching Trudeau's numbers drop like a rock. We're watching millennials start to wake up. I know there's one site that I'm involved in that they started the site about a year ago. And when they started the site, about 16% of their traffic was millennials, and now that's up to about 45% of their listeners and viewers are millennials. So the young people are waking up, guys. I see them getting involved, and this will sure wake them up. They'll like this, man. Hey, come on, a convoy. And, of course, that old song, Convoy, will be playing everywhere, eh? On loudspeakers as you're driving down the highway.
They're latching on to that, I'll tell you. That's what I'll give you
We can come up with other ideas of drawing their attention, too, man. Come on. I had all kinds of ideas about that already. Go ahead.
I'm going to say I've got an example. You kind of, you know, how dire it is. And I'll just give you a little example of, you know, we have to track our man hours, right? I don't, you know, if you're aware, but every safety company, and, you know, we kind of a sideline that we're so environmentally conscious. We have all these regulations and stuff, and we have to track our man hours. So Parkland Pipeline in 2016, they had over a million man hours, and in 2017, they had 428,000 man hours, and in 2018, they had 132,000 man hours. So start to think about that. How many people, how many man hours? And here's a guy that's, he's, you know, is a friend of mine that works there. And I think the owner has been just trying his darndest to keep everybody on and keep it going because, you know, he wants to see the light, but it's difficult. So, yeah, that's that's one company. I mean, I work in an industrial area here that, you know, we were just starting to look at, you know, maybe expanding everybody down here. And we had one company that's gone from 800 people to down to under 200. I mean, I, the list goes on. And here's a interesting thing, too, that when they talk about the stats of EI and, you know, they look at, oh, the EI has gone down and so, you know, the jobless rate's better in Alberta. But what they're not realizing is that a lot of people have run out of the benefit and or never had the benefit because there's a lot of subcontractors and a lot of self-employed, you know, single two mom and pop businesses in town that in the province and other in Saskatchewan and everywhere that they never would have been in the system for EI. So those numbers, you know, if they say that if the current government says 75,000, that's across. It's 100,000. Like it's way more. I don't even know.
Yeah, you can lie with those statistics, and you're right because those numbers. Yeah. When people drop out, like there's a certain threshold where you're not an EI benefits. You haven't worked in like a couple years or something, and so all of a sudden you don't even count as those statistics. I would take them with a grain of salt for sure.
Anything the government puts out, you got to take with a grain of salt.
Also, they like replacing full time jobs with more part time and saying that they're increasing jobs.
Oh. Exactly.
And then you get no benefit.
The fact, exactly. Yeah. Well, employers also don't have to pay the benefits.
Yeah.
And the number of workers that are. Sorry, Laura, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say we're in a big transformation, a time of change. Like, when you go to Papa's Drug Mart and have the self-checkout, like, people are really afraid of people losing their jobs there. So no matter, you know, what we say or if we like it or not, we're in a big time and transformation. And we remember that people still need to work and still have jobs. And oil and gas is part of it. Just like you were saying before, Barry, it would be nice to get away from it, but you can't just cut it off all of a sudden or you're going to have chaos. So we have to have manageable plans to phase it out and have something to replace it and have, you know, transportation to get people to work if you don't want them driving their cars. There's a lot of work that goes into this, and that's what we pay the government so much money to do, is to find these solutions so that we can live our lives and pay taxes, well, right? And I don't think they're doing that right now.
I'm going to say something that'll knock you right off your chair right now, okay? And I'm being very honest about this. In 2 years, we could completely switch away from fossil fuel and be powering everything we're operating with carbon-based fuel. There's a company now in Squamish, has 3 prototype factories running. I urge you people to go look into this. They have just sold 3 programs to Indonesia, and they're also in the process. What other country? I just talked to the representative there 2 days ago. This is starting to go viral, but of course the government is going to push back against this as hard as they possibly can, because our world is run on the petrodollar. But talking from an environmental point of view, I look at it, well, my friends, we have the answers right now, but the government will never give it to us unless we demand it in mass numbers. The information's out there, and I urge you people to look into it, because carbon-based fuel emanates no carbon in the air, burns 100% clean, is more efficient than gasoline, and you can make it by drawing carbon out of the air. So I ask yourself, is that a no-brainer, or is that a no-brainer? That is available to the public right now. If we really wanted to see changes, that would be the thing, because we're talking about taking the power away from the corporate elite that are running over to office. The petrodollar is destroying the world. Sure, we know we have to live in the petrol system right now because people are led to believe that that's the only answer. But I look at the big picture. I look at what's coming to the planet in the next 10 or 15 years. If we got 10 or 15 years, I don't know if we do. I honestly don't. But right now, we could make monumental changes in our world to stop killing it. My thoughts for a few minutes. I urge you to look into that, guys. And that's just one answer.
Yeah, definitely.
I kind of base my thoughts, you know, I kind of really, right now, I base my thoughts. I look at what's going on our planet. We all have to weigh that into the equation, because really, all this stuff that we're talking about right now, sure, you know, it's going to impact our lives directly. But long term, if we don't have a planet to live on, and life ceases to exist on this planet, then we kind of have a big pickle in our pocket. And that's what we see coming right now. If you study it at all and really understand what's going on in the world, you'll understand that we don't have a lot of years to correct it. We have all the answers to do it. And sure, like I said, right now, people believe that we have to confide to the oil, to the oil dollar. And I say no to that, guys. I have to take that stance, because I look at things in the long term. But right now, the economic engine of Canada is that. But I believe we could see a monumental change away from that, and still sustain the quality of life we have in Canada, if not lead the world by example.
Just some thoughts. At what cost?
I don't have the answer to that either. What is the cost? How do we rationalize cost? What really is the most important thing? We've got to kind of like put our priorities on a pedestal, or our priorities in a row, and look at them and say, okay, well, if I'm going to try and achieve this going forward, and it makes sense, then there's going to be some sacrifices involved. There always is. There's always sacrifices involved. But when I really kind of, I sit and I think a lot about, we could incorporate these new changes into our world, create new industries, because it will. It'll create all kinds of offshoot industries. Every industry that dies, there's always a new industry that rises. We could say the same thing about industrial hemp. Industrial hemp is going to revolutionize the world when the world starts embracing it, because it's a no-brainer. And the beauty of that is we could turn Alberta into the biggest industrial hemp farm in the world. And then Alberta would become the biggest vegetable farm in the world. Because if you ever studied the detoxifying effects of hemp and how deep the root systems work, we could turn your Alberta into the biggest food basket in the world simply by implementing hemp. There's all kinds of answers. And I know I'm getting a little off subject here right now, but, you know, sure, I'm supporting my whole thought with this convoy really is a public awareness issue, like really getting people to understand that our country is in a lot of trouble, and it's not just the oil industry. It is a driving economic engine that right now is driving the country. I understand that. There's no denying that, but I do think that there's changes need to be made in the future, and we can do that without destroying our economy. And I'll shut up for a few minutes because I got into a rant. Sorry, guys.
And you can do it without destroying the environment.
I'm bad for that. I'm like the Duracell bunny. You get me going, I can't stop. I'll shut up.
You're talking a lot.
But we can do this.
Sorry, go ahead, Laura.
Oh, no, you go ahead. I was just going to say, okay. Like, we can do this. We just need to all work together and find solutions, right, instead of yelling at each other.
Well, that's what we're here for, right? Different ideas.
Well,
if, you know, somebody here puts an idea in my head, I love it. And if I'm doing the same, well, it's great. We're here to discuss.
I hear a lot of talk, and I mean, obviously, the interconnection between environment and economy. I mean, you can't think of one without the other, and we more and more right now with the computer checkouts, and I mean, just technology getting in the way of production now. What you know takes one person what once was 100. There aren't as many jobs. We can't fuel some sort. We can't economically drive an energy revolution without an economy. Right. So, yeah, unfortunately for now, we have to be dependent on oil and the best possible ways of, you know, I guess, delivery. And I believe I'm with Laura. I think that pipelines are safer. What that also does is it gets our economy so that we aren't dependent on foreign oil. Right. We're buying oil from places whose
Saudi Arabia
standards are just, yeah, you know.
Biggest human rights violators in the world.
Exactly. So
we got to get our product to Tidewater. You know, our Canadian Select is getting hammered because we got all the overproduction and because, you know, obviously the States is our only customer and the Americans are laughing all the way to the bank. I mean, they just.
Oh, yeah. They're raping us. They're raping us right now.
And the global carbon tax. I mean, not only, you know, if you've looked into it, you know, fueling and I guess basically it's money to unelected entities like the UN. Brexit was Brexit for its own reasons. It didn't want a bureaucracy that didn't represent it. So carbon tax, at the very least, they're not offering a solution. They're not saying we have this great new invention and everybody can have one in their home and we'll be completely environment friendly. They don't have a magic wand. They just have trust us with more money and guilt. I mean, it's really guilt what they're using.
It is guilt, and it's just
guilt and fear.
Just a curve government spending, right? And tell me, what is our carbon footprint in Canada?
If you want 1.3% of the carbon in the world.
If you want real initiatives from the ground up. Right. If you want power from the bottom up, not from the top down, then you incentivize people to modify their house, to upgrade their roof to solar shingles, to have water catch systems. But you can see, I mean, at least in the States, they're making it illegal to have a house off the grid, illegal to collect rainwater. I mean, hell, illegal to give food to homeless people. Right. Mm-hmm. They're not allowing the individual to make a difference. They're saying, "Trust us and give us all your cash."
And you know, there isn't one person. I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say there isn't one person in the oil industry that doesn't realize someday that we're gonna have different alternatives. I mean, who knows what we're gonna be doing 20 years, 30 years? You know, with autonomous vehicles and et cetera.
Yeah.
But the issue is now, and the issue is our product to Tidewater and getting these pipelines built and stop buying foreign oil. Like whenever I go down to the States and I tell this story that we have the no product, there's no Energy East pipeline and we have all this product and we can't get it out in the States, you know, the whole story, they look at you like you have three heads. Like, well, are you crazy?
Yeah. Yeah. Who the hell's running you? Yeah.
Yeah. It's just mind blowing. Yeah, we gotta keep pushing, and we gotta, you know, and talk about safety. And as Laura said, a pipeline gets to its destination. The product in a pipeline gets there 99.999 times efficiently and fine. Yes, when the leaks happen, they can be catastrophic. But there's so many controls on shutting down those. They've got operators and every one of those pipelines to shut them down as quick as possible. Way better
pressure
than
detectors.
Yeah, I know. They have level detectors. Yeah. They know instantly if there's a leak, they shut that section down right away so you minimize the damage. And you're right about the numbers. Far so safer happens? Way to export oil.
How did the indigenous get in? What's I guess, what's the conflict? Obviously, it's, you know, sacred land, unceded land, stuff like that. Are they worried about the environmental risks, or are they just not getting offered enough in negotiations?
Can I speak to this? Because I was adopted into the Wolf Tribe of the Nisqually Nation, and that's up near Ewberry, I think, right? The Nass Valley?
I'm up in Terrace. Yeah, the Nass Valley is about an hour north of me here right now.
Yeah. So I'm familiar up there, and I know that the Nishkas were very much looking forward to that LNG line that was going through, because all their young men would have the opportunity to get jobs. Mm-hmm. And because that's been delayed so long, there's been like a decade of men who don't really have solid jobs.
Yeah.
And so that is kind of the question. Well, do we make sure that the First Nations have good jobs that they can take care of their families and work and feel good about themselves, you know? Or do we protect the Great Bear Rainforest and, like, not let those people work, right? And that's a question I ask myself, because I'm not quite sure of the answer, to be honest.
Well, we know where Trudeau, I mean, with comments like, you know, the worry about all these rural, you know, men construction people. I don't know. I can't figure out his brain. He's an idiot. But yeah,
he doesn't have a brain, man.
Yeah.
If he didn't have an earpiece, he'd be stuck for an answer.
It makes my job easy. Yeah.
It's so abstract. It's like a very elitist, abstract thing to say. Like, that's someone who sits in a university and, like, never goes outside. Like, yeah. That's someone who thought of, like, those, like, really abstract studies, I think, because all of us here know construction men who are very, very good people. And women, of course, right?
Yeah.
Yes. Comment without a line, I think.
Well, you wouldn't expect anything less out of Justin Trudeau's mouth at this point, because we know what his agenda is, and we know what he's doing in the country. Yep. I mean, look what he's done since he's come to power. I can't think of one promise outside of the legalization of cannabis that he's kept since he's come to power. And you think legalization of cannabis was a good thing for this country? Well, we now have 47 illegal laws in cannabis as opposed to 8 prior to the legalization. The government's going to control it. They're going to manipulate it. They're going to completely troll the industry. Yep. They're making the fines so heavy now that if you step outside of government control, you're looking at major jail terms, and people think this is a good thing. People got to realize that anything the government touches turns to poop.
Yeah, it's not for your benefit.
There's no exception. There's no exception to that rule. Mm. We got to remember that. That's rule number one, the golden rule. And you know what? I talk to a lot of people up here in the Terrace area. I've talked to native populations that want to see this pipeline go through, and then I talk to the elders, and the elders go, you know what, this land has been like this for thousands of years, and sure, there's prosperity for our youth in the building of pipelines, but what is the cost to the future generations, and really, can we survive without it? Is there other things that we can do to generate prosperity in our communities? And that's when, of course, there's lots of ideas that can be put into these native communities that can generate prosperity. I'm not against pipelines, guys. Really, at this point, I understand the awakening is not going to happen overnight, but I'm hoping that it happens in the very near future, because we talk about 10, 15 years down the road. And honestly, in all my years of doing radio, the last thing I consider myself to be is a doomsdayer. But I follow events happening around the world to our environment in great detail. I spend as much time on that as I do watching what's going on inside a political circus.
Are you ready for that break, Barry?
Right now, I'm telling you without lying, without exaggerating, that if we don't make major changes in the way we're treating this planet right now, I can't say we're going to be alive on this planet in 15 or 20 years. I cannot say that to myself right now. And I base that on hardcore numbers of die-offs of planet, of die-offs of species, of the disappearance of our plankton, of multiple things that are affecting the food chain. It's just, it's really starting, you're going to see it accelerate in a couple of years. I'm not going off the rails here.
No,
we have to find a balance. Go ahead. I'll shut up for a minute.
Sorry. On that level, yes, I've done my investigations on GMO, Monsanto, exactly. A lot of different environmental things, and I see things escalating too. I mean, at the same on every level, on a political scale, on an environmental scale, everything is accelerated.
Okay, I don't want to. You know, I'm not trying to overamp things. I really don't. When I study things, I really kind of I've learned over the years. The last thing I want to do is try and put out false information to people. Yeah. So I try and vet the information really, really strongly. I look at the sources. I look at the sources if they're reliable. I'll see if I can find other articles about the same thing and see if they're all coinciding on the information that I'm being fed. But when I really sit down and look at it, I say to myself, man, if 60% or 50% of what I'm looking at right now is true, then we are really at a point where maybe people have to start changing the way they think and look at the future and not just the current situation and what we can do to offset that. And I'm not saying change oil overnight, but I'm saying that I think oil needs to be phased out because I know there's other alternatives. And I know there is. It's just getting people to embrace it. I'll leave it at that, my thought.
That brings it back full circle. Okay, talking about the environment, because, you know, I mean, one of the earliest rules that I learned is when you look for authoritarianism, you look for selective enforcement. And when you see exactly that we're carbon neutral in Canada, and yet China, India, they all, you know, because it's non-binding, and once people sign, countries sign, they can choose to enforce them or not. So we have somebody like Trudeau enforcing them, but they won't be in China, they won't be in India.
Exactly.
Barry, so, are you ready for that?
We're having this shoved down our throat, and we're looking at massive. I mean, as soon as it's implemented, you know and I know that Trudeau's going to hike the levels right away, and then they're going to hike the levels again. And boy, oh boy, once you've given the fox a taste of the chicken, he's going to eat it all.
Barry, are you ready for that break?
Huh?
Are you ready for that break?
Yeah. Oh, are we on a break? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Hey, listen, guys. I should have known by now. It's 2:00. We're going to take a break for about 4 minutes.
Okay.
And you guys need to use the bathroom or whatever you need to do. Take 4 minutes and let's get back at it for another hour.
Sounds good.
Because there's lots to talk about. Okay.
Okay,
we're
good.
Back. And Kelly Elizabeth, if you're out there and you're listening to me, I know you're in chat, call into the show. Super Big Bad Man on Skype or 26, or what's the phone number again here? It's 269-409-1950. Kelly, if you want to join the conversation. Okay, guys, we're gone for 4 minutes.
Okay.
Welcome back, guys. Second hour of the show. I was just going to ask somebody here in the room a question, but I didn't know we were coming back on this quick. Thanks for everybody hanging around, and I'd like to carry on the conversation we were having in the first hour. Rick had a thought that he wanted to share there, I believe. So I'm going to let Rick talk first here, and then we're going to pass the talk and stick around.
Okay.
Get some thoughts on a few things.
Thanks, Barry. Yeah, a couple of questions that came up during the break. One was if anybody anybody who's organizing has gotten an official word from any of our politicians, you know, what they think about the convoy. Has anybody reached out and publicly said anything about the convoy, or is it being ignored right now?
The only politician that touched it was Michelle Rempel.
Okay.
So
and
far,
she endorsed,
that I've
heard. She endorsed it?
She was out, I think it was rally was she, was it Lord Minister or Red Deer she attended? And then she made some tweets about it, that she was glad to see the grassroots movements rising.
Okay.
She did actually say some positive things about it, but she's the only one I've heard chime in on it so far.
She mentioned grassroots only being referred to as R4R, and I'm really beginning to take exception to that, to those comments. I don't think Michelle, and that's the problem, is that nobody really knows the whole difference, is that R4R is claiming that they're the only grassroots group, and that Yellow Vest isn't grassroots because it's so international. And
yeah,
but this group that we've got, that we did use the symbol of Yellow Vest, obviously for to get the people involved.
Yeah,
this particular group is more. Is if anybody claims that they're not that I'm not grassroots and I'm the one that's got myself out there and doing all the organize, we're a great team, but we're as grassroots as anybody can be. Let's be
Mm-hmm.
So absolutely.
Yeah, I would just like to say that I'm really pleased to be working with Glenn, and he's a grandfather. He's got a beautiful family, lots of grandkids, and he's got a business. He's a retired firefighter. He's still working in the industry with his own company, and he has put himself on the line. He's driving his own truck across the country, and I've done this route 6 times, and it's not easy. I've never done it in the winter. So I'm worried about all the truckers. I hope they're okay. But Glenn has just been great from day one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we need more people like this in the country right now to stand up, and I think this is going to it really get some people to pay attention and maybe start asking themselves some questions about what I can do to get involved.
Well, and
because this kind of movement is contagious, and I can see that happening.
And that's what's happening is they see that you know we're all in the same boat, and
the courage to stand up.
Thanks for that kind words, Laura. That's you're too kind. We're a great team, and it's taken a great team to put this together. But we're all hardworking Canadians, and we just, you know, we don't want the handouts. We don't want the $1.6 billion. Like it's that's the biggest slap in the face that you can give Alberta. Like it was strictly for Alberta, and give me a break. We don't. All you want us to do is be dependent on government handouts. That is not what we want. We want to work.
Exactly. And that's exactly where they want to fund us, man. I mean, complete control of society, the breakdown of the middle class. We see that all right in front of our faces right now. True. So, as I said, this is, you know what I mean? It's so obvious. So obvious what's going on. And boy, if that doesn't get you mad, I don't know what will.
Exactly. His very first statement about, you know, with the crisis of the oil industry, well, we're going to look at what we can do with EI. Well, really? Like, let's.
That's your answer?
That's a band-aid. That's not healing the wound. That's just covering it up.
And to put more rail cars out, I mean, you know, it's crazy. This pipeline should have been going. I mean, it's crazy that it's not shovels in the ground already.
Barry.
Trudeau has effectively shut down every Trump pipeline in Canada, and under Bill C-69, no more will be constructed, folks. So that's what we're looking at with this government. He's doing exactly what he's been told to do.
Kelly's in here, not Barry.
Well, there was one that was reversed. Remember, was it Line 9 or something? I can't remember. Do you guys remember going from Alberta east to, I think, Montreal?
Yes, I remember hearing something about them reversing it, yeah.
Yeah, there is one that is going there, thank goodness, because at first we thought maybe it was all Saudi oil coming to the east, and it's not. We do import some from the United States and I think a number of different countries. But what I would like to see is maybe like a slow oil plan for our own country, so we're not buying any foreign oil and we're only using Canadian oil, and it's a managed plan over like maybe 50 years, if that's possible. I'm not an expert in this, but I think if we had something that it wasn't like boom and bust, you know, we could maybe support our country and our children and our grandchildren for a long time with our resources. But then that goes against what you're saying, Barry, about, you know, you just want to get it kind of out quickly with the renewable energy.
But I don't, listen, Kelly, I believe, you know what, I believe the human being is a very ingenious entity. And I think with our ingenuity, we can get away from oil, which I think is essential, but not just devastate our country. And I honestly believe that. So I'm not saying that we have to shut down oil tomorrow. I know that's not feasible. Right now it is the driving force in our economy. But I'm saying that there has to be a little bit of information put out to people as to alternatives and let them pick up that, digest it, and figure out what they want to do going forward, because I'm only bringing forth information that I see and it disturbs me, okay? And, I'm not saying that oil has to go out tomorrow. I'm not anti-oil. Right now, like I said, it is what's driving our economy in Canada. But everything that we're making with oil, but in the same mouthful, everything that we're making now with oil are plastic. Everything that you're using has got a petroleum product in it, basically. All can be replaced. And if you look at the benefits of all the things that can be taken out of products we're using every day, that not just the tank, not the gas in our tank, but everything you're using, and those effects on the human body, I think about that. And then I think about changing that to something like a hemp-based plastic that has no effect on the environment, will break down, become part of the environment 6 months after it's manufactured. I look at all kinds of alternatives that can solve the problems that oil is creating. Right now, it's what we have. But I'm just saying there's other things that we need to look at going forward if we want to be able to give our children an abundant planet to live on. And right now, I can't say that. I got to be realistic. Well, that's all I'm saying. Just interjecting thoughts, guys. I'm not trying to be negative. I'm not trying to be positive about anything. I'm just interjecting thoughts.
Yeah, it's a very good point. That's what I focus on mine, is just getting rid of the plastics as much as possible. And you're right about the chemicals that are in plastics too. So if you put bisphenol A, BPA for short, into plastic, it makes it more malleable and more workable. BPA is actually a failed contraception from the 1940s, and it's found in a lot of plastics that touch our food and our drinks. Yeah, I had a feeling you would know about this.
I know all about
but
that.
It's really scary, and we actually, Canada banned it in baby bottles, at least, because moms are heating up their formula in baby bottles, and then that birth control, basically, is getting into baby milk. And there's lots of studies saying that it leads to problems. Like, no one wants to give their babies birth control. My goodness, it's got to be terrible for their systems. There's a fish study that says the male fish, when they're exposed to high levels of BPA, grow female parts.
Atrazine.
Yeah. Like I said, I know oil has provided a lot of Canadians a good living. But I really say to people, sometimes maybe we really have to look at the big picture. Right now, unfortunately, we're in this situation we are. But I don't think it would take a lot of effort from a lot of people to make monumental changes that would really affect the future of our children. And that's what I really kind of think about every day. I think about what's going on to the planet. I look at the depletion I look at the die-off of species alone, and the numbers that are now, they're not BS. These are actual hardcore numbers about the amount of mammals and species that have left the planet since 1970. And I go, my God, like, we got this thing called the food chain, and eventually that food chain is going to break down. We see our food prices starting to spiral. We see oxygen depletion in the planet becoming a real issue due to the die-off of plankton. We look at crop productions for countries for the next 6 years, and it just blows my mind, because every report I read from government sources tell me that we're looking at 50 to 60% crop reduction worldwide in the next 6 years. Well, I roll that around in my brain, and I go, oh, my God. What are people going to eat? So we do need to make changes. That's what I keep stressing.
You know, like I said,
we got to look at the long term. We really got to be responsible.
What is that time?
There's a balance. There's got to be a balance. I agree. I know what you're saying.
There's a balance. And listen, Laura brought up a good point that, you know, we as individuals, we have to watch what we do. That's going to make the biggest difference in the world. You know, plastics, all this stuff. And, you know, we, as a company, we buy water bottles, do all that stuff to be environmentally friendly. And oil and gas, we're environmentally friendly. And yes, eventually there's going to be change, but we're years and years and years. But, like, this is not, like, I know you'd love to see this happen overnight, but it's not. Like, so we got to continue to focus on our goal here of getting some noise and getting this oil industry back in order.
Glenn, I agree with you 100%. I agree with what you're saying right now 100%. I do believe, though, that it won't take years, as many years as you think. If the knowledge is put out in front of people, it really comes down to that, sharing that knowledge with people, because when we talk about things like this, it really resonates common sense. And what we're doing right now is not common sense. So right now, I agree that I don't want to see our economy go crashing down the tubes. Canada has provided me with a great life, but I also kind of want to look down the road a little bit and see what we can do to make changes that maybe give our kids a chance to enjoy what we've enjoyed. That's all.
I think we can do both.
I think there's a balance there.
Yeah.
I think we could see monumental shifts. You know, we could see monumental shifts into this carbon fuel industry. Once it starts and people start understanding it, well, all of a sudden you've got a job there. And you're involved yourself in something that's going to take away from the big corporate machine that's running over us.
Can I interject?
There's ideas. Just ideas. I like to interject. That's all.
What's that?
Just ideas. I like to interject.
Yeah, no, I'm just listening to what you're all saying, and I'm thinking to myself, you know, I don't know if we're seeing the forest for the trees here, but we're, you know, we can't kill the very industry that's going to be the ones that come up with the technology. A lot of this technology is developed in the energy sector, and you know, with what Trudeau is doing, he's basically killing it. And I'm very tired. I can't seem to put my sentence together today. But I'm just seeing that there's, the carbon tax, as far as I'm concerned, is not an incentive, a proactive incentive to get these companies to develop more green-like technology. And I'm just seeing the whole thing just seems off balance to me. And I'm just really just on the tip of my thought here. If anybody else can complete it for me, that would be great.
I think I can try and complete. I think maybe what the caller is trying to say too is that if we can continue to look at shutting down any of this, that's where the technology is happening, and we need to keep the industry alive. There's lots of innovation, you know, especially in Canada. We're the leader in the oil and gas industry. We're the leaders in innovation. I mean, we've been doing things up here that they haven't done in the States for, they just got some of our technology. That's why the United States is going through an oil boom now, that because they've tacked onto our technology. We're the leading edge in this country, and we never seem to be proud of it. We always bury our heads, and, you know, and I think of anything that's good that's come out of this whole movement is it's woken up a sleeping giant. And
I agree.
I think so. And I think we have to be really, really aware of where that money is coming from. Not just the money, but the they're motivated. They want to find other, you know, I have a friend who goes to, he's in the U.S. all the time, and he's really tweaked the carbon capture. And he's got more companies in the U.S. interested in his carbon capture technology than he has Canadian companies. And that, to me, that's concerning. I mean, not only are they ahead with, you know, well, they're miles ahead of us with production and whatnot, but here they are looking at this technology, and we can't seem to, our own government doesn't seem to be very interested in looking at it from the small man. You know, he's come up with something fantastic, and they just, you know, it's difficult for funding. And
I'm gonna post a link here in chat in a couple of minutes. I'm just gonna go find it, guys, about the company in Squamish right now that has has got contracts now. One of them, like I said, is in Indonesia for building of these facilities to capture carbon to produce fuel. If the Canadian people don't wake up to this, it's because the government's doing a very, very good job of keeping it under wraps.
Would this go under, you know, Tesla was another example of disruptive technology?
You know what? If I said that there's total free energy exists on our planet, 100%, absolutely undeniable, it's there. It's just that it's being kept back from us, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Because petrodollar rules the world.
Yeah.
The dollar, the banksters, they don't want this stuff out there, man. What do you mean you can produce your own power? We're not going to allow that to happen.
Yeah.
No, can't drink that rainwater. No, that's not good. It's got to come through the pack.
And that's,
we got to add our chlorine and fluoride before you can drink it, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
We love you.
And that's the whole, I mean, we're seeing the effects of it. They want a deindustrialized West. They bring everybody down to third world status. There is no middle class, and you have your separation society, the elites and us plebs, us, you know, under a communist dictatorship.
Yeah, and then they nationalize everything all the way up to and including the green energy.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Well, you know, so maybe we would move forward a lot quicker if Quebec were to start extracting some of their resources and applying some of their, you know, practice what you preach. Extract your resources. See what it's like to go through that process with all of the regulations. Mm-hmm. And maybe you guys should come up with some great technology, you know. I just find it really crazy that, you know, we're the ones, you know, Alberta feels like we're carrying the weight of the nation on our backs. Meanwhile, we're being taken out at the knees, and you've got Quebec sitting on, resources that they are not taking out of the ground. And that's another issue.
Why is that?
I haven't a clue.
Anybody want to answer that one here? Anybody here have an answer for that one? Because I don't. That's a question I've asked.
I don't, but...
Maybe something rally and set up.
Yeah, Larry Smith knows quite a bit about that, actually. He dug into that. I could probably...
You guys remember the Churchill River debacle about Quebec and Newfoundland, and there was that big dam that was going in, and then I don't know if this information is, like, I don't know how to say this properly, but I believe that Quebec screwed over Newfoundland and was taking all the profits from the dam and selling it to the U.S. Do you guys remember that?
Yeah, I remember something about that, but I didn't look into that.
Yeah, there's something about that. Yeah, I'd have to look into it.
I know that Quebec Hydro surplus absolutely goes to the States.
Yeah, and I think Newfoundland is really mad about that. Okay. There is a big thing with it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and yeah. Hibernia, I think they got screwed on that, too.
I think it was if you guys would mind if I switch gears for a minute, and I missed the first half of the show, and I just wanted to ask your caller, Glenn, a little bit more about this Yellow Banner convoy that's going on. Would that be okay, yes. Or have we already covered that?
No, go ahead. You can always talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, I'm just I'm seeing an awful lot on social media, and I'm not quite understanding where this is all coming from. But you know, to my knowledge, the big convoy coming out of Red Deer, the one that Glenn is organizing, is the big one. It's got all the funding. It's got lots of companies on board. They're assembling people. They've got money pouring in. They're ready to roll. They're trying to do the whole thing right. And just because they're going to fly under the yellow banner, which, by the way, I have to say I think is an awesome idea, but just because they're going to fly under that banner, there's, you know, some advocacy groups, I think well-funded advocacy groups that have been around for quite some time that have been, you know, rallying and advocating and, you know, screaming and yelling on behalf of Alberta resources. Now they actually have a chance, you know, to hop on board and let's do this convoy to Ottawa, and they don't appear to want to be involved just because of this whole yellow banner thing. Now, here's my take on that, if you don't mind me telling you. I feel that you know, in Alberta we've been screaming and yelling for 3 years to be heard, and we have not been heard. And all of the rallies and whatnot that have been taking place in Alberta over the last 4 or 5 weeks, let's say, you know, they're contained. Like, you know, it's just all of us here in Alberta doing it. We're all on, oh, we're having a rally. And, but we're kind of rallying in our own little echo chamber. So nothing much. They're going to do whatever they can out east to make sure none of that is being seen out east, you know. But now we have a chance for everybody to get on board, including the advocacy groups, to move forward, form one great big long, you know, line, and off we go to Ottawa. And all of a sudden now there's some sort of a problem. I think this is really a chance because of this Yellow Vest movement, which, by the way, Canadians have adopted, applied whatever segment of it they like to their particular cause for their particular province, and they're prepared to go to Ottawa Canadian style. You know, we're not running around like lunatics. Like, I'm not going to say the ones in France are lunatics, but I think there's some bad stuff coming, a few bad things coming out of the movement in France. And Canadians are just not doing the yellow movement that way. They're just not. They're doing it Canadian style. What we're doing with that movement has nothing to do with the way that France is doing it. And even their manifesto is different. But anyhow, I just have to say that I'm sad to see some of these groups that I thought were, you know, quite reputable suddenly not wanting to play ball. And I just, for the life of me, cannot figure out why.
Kelly, I got to jump in here. Okay, because initially in the beginning of the show, we were talking about how so many different interests are wanting to lead this event. Now, yeah. I'm not going to name names, but I got in contact with somebody after mentioning that I wanted to do a documentary from the beginning of the. So I got in contact with somebody, and basically, and it sounded really good, and there were offers, you know, to send contracts and NDA non-disclosures and stuff like this, and maybe to fund us going out and doing it. But I don't think we would have been able to use our footage for ourselves, right? For our own work, it would have been selling the footage. And then upon looking into some background, you know, it had connections to Infinity Films, which is, I guess, claimed to do some stuff for Netflix. And it got my mind spiraling into, you know, the Obamas and how they, I guess, before they left, they invested in Netflix, and there was rumor of some disinfo stuff. So I find some of the players really interesting, and the whole separation between no yellow vests and maybe we want to control them.
The aspect of it, I'm talking. You know, we have this. I'm not talking about the internal aspect of who's documenting and who isn't. What I'm talking about is the fact that we right now we have this wonderful tool, of this yellow banner that we can fly under that has actually for once started to gain some attention from MSM. Okay, now why would we take such a powerful tool out of the hands of the grassroots movement that wants to go to Ottawa and for once have a little bit of bite instead of barking up a storm for 3 years. Bark, bark, bark. Okay, well, y'all have your advocacy groups. You're all, you know, we love oil and, you know, we're oil this and oil that and blah, blah, blah. Okay, that's great. We love your rally. That other stuff, but what have you actually done with it? Show me the actions that you have performed that have produced any results.
Yeah,
and you know what I'm saying? All covered by alternative media, and that's great. But where we really need to open up the communication lines on these issues is between the West and the East. And I really think that that yellow banner is the perfect conduit and an additional way, another method of us being heard here in Alberta. You know, we're carrying the weight of a good portion of the Canadian economy on our backs through the resources that we have underneath our feet. And what do? You're right. Like, it's just, it's insane. So I'll shut up now, but that's where I'm at with that. And it's got me quite concerned about, you know, what's really going on behind some of these groups is, that don't want to go forward under a yellow banner, and if so, why? I find that very suspicious.
What's the motive if they're not? I'll tell you, this group, our Yellow Vest group, is all about. I've said it once, and I've said it 1,000 times. We're all about getting trucks to Ottawa, and whatever it takes to do that. And I'm not. But what? So that's my motive. I've got no. There's no anything in it for me. In fact, it's, you know, I've got to find somebody to run my company for me while I'm doing this, spending 20 hours a day, you know, on it. So that, and if anybody wants to knock that down and not jump on board and work together, then what's your motive?
Exactly.
Well,
exactly.
I think that's very unpatriotic for somebody to want to knock down such a wonderfully powerful movement that for once has the means of being heard.
Exactly. That's the bottom line, Kelly.
Yeah. And I mean, the reality is with so many people wanting to contribute or attend, there is no way that this could be separated or broken. You're going to see all of it.
Yeah. At the end of the day, these guys are going to get on the road and we're going to go down to Ottawa and we're going to stick together. We're going to make our stomp and our message and peacefully. And why there's no need for us Albertans and everybody to be tearing down each other. We need strength within each other and work together.
I agree, and it's my understanding, Glenn, that your organization has reached out many times to these other groups and been very generous.
So, I've tried that.
Bring your funding even, and you know, we can help with fuel cards, and we can do this, and we can do that, and yet these other folks are just not interested. Why?
I don't understand.
I don't want this to affect the drivers. Let's be honest, guys. You know, this is about the drivers. You know, it's one thing for the organizers. You know, you're in your little organizing world, and you're doing your thing. But you know what? The minute those men get into that truck, they are the ones that are carrying the message from the people to Ottawa. They're the guys that have to eat sandwiches for 7 days straight and pee in a pot sitting in the back of their truck. You know what I'm saying? And because they're the ones that, you know, don't want to break formation. They are going. They have a purpose. I've heard that some of them are bringing letters from their communities, that people that have written directly to Ottawa And I think that's a great idea. You know, hey, fill up those trucks with letters from average, everyday Canadians. I know you're picking up a lot as you travel through the provinces and whatnot, and I think there's quite a little letter-writing campaign going on behind the scenes, and I think that's fantastic. But, you know, the stories are about why would a person have time to drive to Ottawa, but get in a truck to bring his message to Ottawa? You know, what's his story? Why is he doing this? What's the message he hopes to bring to Ottawa? So I'm really hoping that this mess, I wouldn't say it's a complete mess, but, you know, you've got some groups that just don't want to play ball, and it's unfortunate. But you know what? You're hurting the men that are getting in those trucks, and women. You're hurting those guys. They want to get in those trucks. They want to bring this message. They want to do this. They're volunteering their time to do these things, and this really is about, they are the grassroots, and
yeah, the,
I don't want to see these problems that have been occurring with these other larger, well-funded advocacy organizations, you know, muddy the waters of the real message from those guys that are getting in those trucks and driving.
Yeah, those people that are giving us the most trouble, there's a couple of them, they're not truck drivers. They don't work in the oil patch.
Yeah.
You know, they're one, well, I won't get into it too much what they do, but they have kind of easy indoor jobs, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I shouldn't say that, but they're not oil workers, they're not truck drivers. I'll say that.
So they're not the men on the ground. They're not the boots on the ground kind of guys. They're more.
And that's who we're representing. We represent
them.
That's
what I'm fighting.
You want to represent.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. And I'm fighting for all the guys that, you know, that are normally out in my trucks and with me. And, you know, like I said, I've been a firefighter in the fire business 25 years. And I drive a truck. I own the truck. And I'm standing up for all the guys that text me every day and say, you know what, Glenn, do you have any work? So these are the guys.
Yeah, and that's what I was talking about, Kelly, with the advocacy play with groups getting involved and stuff. Is you know, that's what me and Derek want to document. We want to you know, get the men in the cabs, their personal stories, the community stories.
Yes, I think that's the way to go. I love it. Yeah, because it's about them, isn't it? It really is.
It is. It is. It's about, I mean, every individual story, how it affects them, why they decided to do this.
Yeah.
Well,
yep,
I gotta say, Glenn, when you told me that you've spent 25 years as a firefighter, my level of respect for you went right up to probably the top respect I could give anybody, because anybody that's willing to go into a house and risk their life or put their life on the line to save another person's life is a very special individual. So kudos to you, my friend, and
for sure.
I admire firefighters.
Yeah, and just to be clear, I want to make it clear that I've been in the business for a little over almost 25 years. I worked urban, I worked rural, for the city, and then in an industrial. And you know what? It's I appreciate that, but we sign on for what it is, and it's a job. It's we're doing our best. Everybody's got very important jobs out there.
Amen. And you're doing a good one here. I like what you guys are doing, and I'm going to do everything I can to get the word out, because, boy, if we could formulate a convoy of 5 or 6 or 8 or 7,000 trucks, we would garnish international attention. Yeah. Mainstream media would be forced to expose it. They'd be forced to hear us talk.
And
boy, oh boy, it could be good.
There's only one Trans-Canada Highway. Why can't we just get on it together? What are we going to do? If there's other trucks, well, I don't want to drive beside that truck because it has a yellow ribbon. Like, that's really stupid.
It is stupid. And, you know, I keep saying we can't have people across the country like two high school girls that are not talking to each other. Mm-hmm. And this is why we've been trying.
Awesome. This is such a great analogy.
We've been trying. Yeah. We've been trying
so
hard.
No, exactly. Come on, you guys. There's only one Trans-Canada Highway. What is your plan? Are we going to take the ditch and you're going to take the road, or how's this going to work?
Well, maybe 100,000 trucks will get involved. We'll have to use the yellowhead as well.
Yeah.
Oh. You know, and you know, the other thing too that really I just kind of had this other thought too. You know, most of these fellows that are going to be in this convoy, I mean, they work in jobs where reflective clothing is actually required.
Yeah.
It's the perfect article of clothing to represent the men that work on the ground. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, and they're throwing, they throw
their
this,
job.
Well,
they have to wear that stuff, right? It's throwing, not like we're all putting colanders on our heads and, you know, wearing metallic pink boots and that's our, you know, outfit.
Well, exactly. You know? They're throwing out the idea of different, well, why don't you pick something else? And it's like, well, you know, it's synonymous, the yellow vest, and you're right. We do wear it in Canadian. We wear it out exactly what you said. And we just have to prove, that, as Laura said, that we are different. And yes, we adopted this, and yes, there's problems, and yes, there's radicalism wherever, and it's here too. But, you know, that's not where it started. The yellow vest movement didn't start to say we're going to be radical. It was the radicals that came out of the yellow vest group. So
for sure. Oh no. And you know, the only reason that they did that in France is because in France it's required by law that you carry reflective clothing in your vehicle in the event that you break down on the road. Before you get out of that car and pop the hood, you have to put on your reflective clothing, because then the other drivers can see you, and it's also a signal that you are a motorist in distress. So you know, they just grabbed what they had handy and they put it on, and that's how they recognize each other during their rallies. So that's where that started. And I just remember listening to something on the radio, and they were saying, oh, what an unusual piece of clothing to adopt as a uniform. Oh, there must be something to the color yellow. Yeah, they have to carry it by law, you know. It was just kind of an interesting little twist. But,
I have a question for the. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name, caller.
Kelly, Elizabeth.
Kelly. So, what do you think we're going to get noticed? Do you think we're going to get noticed in Ottawa?
you betcha.
I think just from being here, I don't think that there won't be a street where there won't be trucks on it. I mean, if we're looking at those numbers, there won't be a safe area.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, every town that I've been to that's had one of these rallies, people, you know, we're doing this Canadian style, and these rallies with the yellow, I'll call it the yellow banner, the yellow convoy, yellow banner, whatever, they're very positive rallies. We are not France. We won't do this like France. Nobody's going to, you know, tip buses upside down and light cars on fire and crap. I mean, that's not us. That's not who we are. That's not Canada. That's not what we do. We never would. It's ridiculous to think that we would. And, maybe if you...
Hockey games.
I'm going to finish my sentence. I'm going to finish my sentence now by saying, yes, I could understand that if after doing that for 6 months, nobody listened, that, you know, some teenagers might do something stupid like that. But, most people aren't prepared to do that. I'm just, I'm just a huge advocate, I would say, of using the loudest voice that we have.
We did address it earlier, the history of
Canada. This will make history. Well, then let's do it right. The world is watching.
Yeah.
Well, we did address that earlier, that the working class people are going to prevail, I believe. One quick thought.
France, sure, they're turning over buses. But you know what? You can't talk to a person in France now, basically, that hasn't know of somebody that's been raped by a migrant. And when that starts happening in Canada, and that's the talk of the dinner table, watch what Canadian, then don't say ever, because it could always happen.
At this point in time, we're not there yet. Now,
no, we're not there yet, but we could get there real quick.
That we can look into that and say, well, yeah, those guys are 5, 6, 7, 8 years ahead of the problem we're going to be facing. Mm-hmm. And this is what it's come to for them. Because of, where they're at. Yeah, absolutely. We can see it. That's what scares us. That's why we need to do this now.
Now, yeah.
Well, I originally had one of the leaders of the Yellow Vest movement in France lined up for an interview today, but he was arrested a couple days ago. So
really? Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
That
was
said. I was gonna do an hour with him, and I was going to do an hour with these gentlemen this week, but that got changed around because he was arrested.
That wasn't Roman, was it?
Huh?
Okay.
I'm not going to say any names or anything like that.
Yeah, just,
that happened a couple days ago. And I was put in touch with him through a gentleman here in Canada.
Okay.
So, but anyways, he can't join us because he's sitting in jail right now, unfortunately. And that's something that's going to come to our society very, very soon, guys. And I hate to say that, but it's true.
But if we're smart and we get proactive about not wanting this to happen here, and we get on the ball now...
We don't have a choice.
We might be able to completely avoid this.
But we don't have a choice right now. We know it. We see it. It's in our face. So if we don't get involved, our children are really going to curse us. That's the way I see it.
Yeah.
So we're all here for the same reason. We all see it. We all understand the threat it represents.
And lucky for us, we have enough unemployed people right now that they have at least the time to do this.
Can somebody talk for a minute? My dog's got to go outside, and he's looking at me, and he's scratching. Yeah. So if I don't let him be on the floor. I'll be back in 30 seconds here.
I would have a question for Glenn. What are the dates again for this?
So we kind of talked about it a bit, but February, we originally slated for February 15th, and Canada Winter Games, it proved to be a conflict with them, and it's our motive to be cooperative with every group out there, because we want to start off right, and we want to make sure everybody's on the same page. So we've actually moved our date to February 14th to take off. It's actually going to be it's going to give us an extra day to get out there, and then we're going to be...
Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
That's correct.
Am I right? That's Valentine's Day, isn't it?
Yeah, that is.
Yeah. Wife is not going to get her child.
Love your country.
And for the love of your
country.
Okay,
you're putting all these men on the road on Valentine's Day.
People are going to be angry.
That's all worthwhile.
You know what?
Yeah, exactly.
Give me my Canada back. That'd be the best Valentine's you could ever give me.
There's a new symbol we can give everybody hearts to take off that day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that actually would be great. That'd be great. Yellow hearts. How about that?
Yellow hearts. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I don't think I was introduced to this other lady that's online right now. Who am I speaking to?
This is Laura Nash. So I host and produce a radio show here in Ontario. It's called the Zero Waste Countdown. So I'm about to get into reducing garbage. So I haven't put out a garbage bag since July. I try to not send anything to landfill. And that's my way of reducing my carbon footprint, is just by not consuming so much, because I do need a vehicle and I do need to heat my home. I have propane and I have an electric heat pump, but without it, I would freeze and die.
We do want to try to live through this.
Yeah. Well, Laura is
interesting. Okay. And what's your show called again?
It's called the Zero Waste Countdown.
Show that you do?
Yeah, it's called the Zero Waste Countdown.
The Zero Waste Countdown. Is there a Facebook page for that?
There's not, but it's on the internet, so you can Google it. It's all over Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you listen to podcasts. There's a website, Instagram. I'm on there too. I'm not against pipelines, and I am against the carbon tax. I feel like it's going to put the working class at too much of a disadvantage. It's not fair. It's not going to reduce carbon, and then the major polluters are free to pollute still, or they get exemptions. It's totally wrong. It's not the way to save the environment. It's just going to hurt our working class. So I'm against it, and that's why I'm here, as well as another. I have many grievances against the government, but those are the ones I'm focusing on.
Right.
Oh, sorry. Okay. I had to step away. I had to step away there for a second, guys, but dogs, animals, and you can't control their bladders. anyways, I didn't get what we were talking about, so carry on.
Oh, I was just asking about who this other person was we had online with us today, Barry.
Oh, which one are you? We have Glenn, and we have Rick Boswick on with us.
Right.
And me.
Okay.
And Laura.
Is there going to be some documenting along the way? What's happening with that part of it? Then, Rick, you were saying something about you were going to go with some of the drivers and talk to them and get their stories, or what's happening with that now? Is that happening?
That's the plan. That's our intent. Whether or not it gets funded, we got three or four different people that are trying to crowdsource for us, just okay. to get out there so we can I'm sure you know, talking to different people, we could get. We'd really need maybe 10 different truckers who would be willing to hopscotch us around from truck to truck as we went along the convoy.
I can speak to that too. So we've got two filmmakers, one. So Infinity Films, he's going to do a full length documentary. But then also Rebel Media has been talking to our group. They want to send someone with us to ride along and document the entire thing.
Nice, Rebel. They probably have Sheila Gunn Reid.
Rebel is over 1 million viewers now, guys.
Yep.
And gaining like crazy. Wow. So there you go. That's good news.
Yep.
That's good news. That really is.
If we can't,
well, we better make sure we all have each other's numbers after this little talk, because it sounds like there's some slide to this.
Yeah.
I'll give you guys another show or even two before this event happens, and we can get people lined up and we can really get it out there. And I think as it gains momentum, we'll have a lot of interest, and we'll have to do this again in the very, very near future, maybe in a couple of weeks or 3 weeks from now, and bring everybody up to date with what's going on, the growth in the movement, people getting involved, because I see it something, like I said at the beginning of the show, as a mechanism right now, something that we can actually grasp and have our absolute disdain to the government expressed and have them hear us and have the mainstream media. And that's the bottom line here. And that's, I think, is the most important thing about this whole thing, is if we garnish enough attention, they are going to have to hear our grievances. And maybe Canadians will hear some stuff that they haven't heard before. And maybe that'll be the tipping point.
Speaking to that, I'd like to see a great big barrel sitting on the lawn at Parliament Hill. And I'd like to see these drivers hand off their letters that they've brought from all over the country to the folks, the receiving committee that will be on the ground waiting for them, and take these letters and pop them in the barrel, bring them up the steps of Parliament Hill. Here's some letters from Canadians, and we drove so many thousands of miles.
I think you're going to need quite a few barrels.
Do you?
Has anybody decided to speak? Is there a plan once everybody arrives?
Yeah, to my knowledge, I was talking to a lady.
I want to speak. I want to speak.
Trying to put together a ground crew, so to speak, to receive these people to receive them and to support them and be there for them. And, maybe I'm not sure exactly what's happening. Maybe there'll be a receiving rally on the ground for them or something to that effect, to receive the convoy. Yeah. I'm not really sure. I'd love to find out more about that. I'm really excited about the whole thing. I kind of just want to go to Red Deer and be part of the kickoff.
Yeah.
Be a tailgate party the night before.
Get a gas me fund going for Barry and I'll come over.
Barry, you said it now. Now you, that's a commitment.
I'm flying. I'm going to Ottawa for the 20th for the rally.
I want you to come to Red Deer, Alberta, where the bigger portion of the convoy is leaving from on that day. Boy. That would be great.
You know what? You know what, guys? Financially, if I financially could afford to go on the trip, be on the whole thing, do reports, blah blah blah, the whole shebang, I would dedicate my time. But fortunately, money doesn't allow me to do that. So, but anyways. Yeah.
Sure.
Maybe one of us will win the lottery. If anybody wins the lottery between now and then.
Agreed.
When was the estimated time of arrival?
All the towns and cities as that convoy drives down the highway, leaving their houses, going out to if they live along the highway somewhere, and holding up a sign and just cheering them on. Like, this is important. I think this is going to make Canadian history. I really do.
Well, Rick's getting involved. Rick's going to document it. So here's an idea, guys. Let's support some online hosts that want to expose this and get it on the radio and be out there listening.
Are you fundraising?
No. I'm doing it for Rick because Rick's going to be documenting it all.
Yeah. We got to try and get out there.
Have Rick document Barry trying to raise funds?
And Derek, yeah.
Wouldn't that be, boy, I'll tell you, put me and Rick
and
a few
Derek,
other people.
You put me and Rick and a few other Derek.
People. Derek, put a few people together. We'd have a lot to say. I know that.
I got to ask, what was the estimated time of arrival of the convoy?
February 7th, 20th. Sorry. Didn't mean.
Yeah, originally when we were leaving on the 15th, we got about 4 days of travel planned, and moving it up that day will allow us to
Speak up, Glenn. Speak up. Can't hear you.
I'm sorry. We planned to be there originally on the 20th, but since we've moved it up a day, it's going to be the 19th ish. So it'll allow us a little more time to get there for people to rally, more people to get there, and it'll allow for some delays too. We're fully expecting some adverse road conditions, et cetera. So 19th, 20th, they'll know, they're going to have a pretty good idea when we show up.
Okay.
And there's going to be a manifesto made up, and we'll paste it everywhere. So every town that's on Facebook will know when these trucks are going to be going through their town, approximate time.
Nice.
And we'll be fairly close. I'm sure that'll all be organized, and I'm willing to help out with that. Or any way I can help out with this, guys, I'll dedicate some time to it for sure.
Well, I think there's already a bunch of provincial yellow vest groups, and they all are quite well populated. Mm-hmm. Perhaps we could post that type of information on those groups because they're from those cities.
Yeah.
So something like that. But
Yeah, I wanted to see something like a Santa tracker, but for the convoy, like they do on with NASA on New Year on Christmas Eve.
That is an awesome idea. All it would really take is one of those driving outfits to have
GPS
and where their company and the system where the company knows where they are all the time on the road.
Yeah.
Oh. And that's all it would take is to hook up.
I can just see all the cool things that are coming out of this, guys, in the next little while. All these brains are going to start working. Thanks. Unfortunately, we're down to the last 4 minutes of the show. So I'm going to pass it around the table real quick and get a closing comment from you great folks that have joined me today. And we're going to shut the show, but I am going to get you guys hopefully back in here in a couple weeks. And next week I'm full. But the week after that, let's bring an update, or possibly the week after that, we'll do an update show on this. So, Glenn, start with you real quick, the last comment before we shut it off.
I'm going to hear from the East End first here, just out of curiosity. Yeah.
Okay, Glenn.
Oh, who are we going with? Okay, well, my closing comment is just, to say that we are a peaceful group. We're not, we don't want any trouble. We're, again, the non-radical, non-racist. We are Yellow Vest. We're trying to get that attention. This convoy has taken an incredible amount of work, and we've got a fantastic team in place, and the team, it's growing. Like we realize the how big this is going to be, and we're getting some professionals on board as well, legal and accounting and et cetera, just to make sure everything is done 100% legit, and we're going to go make some noise.
Amen.
Nice.
Laura, are you still with us, Laura?
Nope.
Oh, I think you lost her. Okay, Kelly, last thought from you.
No, Rick, you go ahead first. I'll go last.
Okay, well, I want to thank everybody else for being on. It was a great conversation. We could have gone for hours more. But, as things develop, I hope that we have another group chat. And I look forward to a great event. It's going to be phenomenal. I have a good estimation of, the people that are going to show up and the numbers. Right now I can't even guess, but being on the ground in Ottawa, I know usually how it goes down, and it's going to be very exciting.
Yeah.
Great. And Kelly, last thought from you?
My last thought would be that for the next show, what I'd like to do is get a hold of this lady I've been talking to out east, who's trying to prepare some ground support and a receiving rally for the convoy. I'd like to see if I can get her on the show with you, Barry.
Okay, well, we can always do that in a couple of weeks from now, Kelly. Well, lots of ideas and lots of people I want to talk about this this movement. It's kind of got my attention. And like I said at the beginning of the show, I see it as a mechanism to really unify Canadian voices, no matter what our disagreements with the government are, to really unify our voices in a voice that will be heard. And they need to hear from us. They need to hear from us.
Yeah.
Well, guys, it was a great show. I want to thank my guests for joining me. I want to thank Steve, my producer, for producing my show and everything he does for me. I want to thank PIR for allowing this platform for us to share our thoughts today. Laura, I would like to talk to you again about possible alternative energy sources in the future. And I did post a link on carbon fuel in chat there. I think I put it in both sites. So if you have a chance after the show, take a look at that, because that's pretty interesting stuff. Thanks for joining us today, guys. It's a great show. First hour was great. Second hour was great. Like Rick said, we could go for hours, but unfortunately we had a couple and they went really quick. So So I'll be back. I'll be back next week, same time, same place. God bless you all and have a great week. And bye for now.